When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Following On podcast from TalkSport. I'm John Norman and alongside Jared Kimber every day of the England and Pakistan Test Series. And where do we start today? There's so much to look back on a wonderful day's cricket as England somehow got past Pakistan. Plenty to talk about on the show. You're listening to Following On. Well, by now you know, England have beaten Pakistan in the first test match of three by 3 wickets. At one stage, chasing 277, they were 117 for five, and then up stepped Jos Buttler. What pressure must have been on his shoulders, and also Chris Wokes, to combine for a match-winning 139 partnership for the sixth wicket. Buttler went eventually for 75. There was a scare here or there, but they made it look relatively comfortable. Incredible day, incredible test match. Let's get started.
Story of the day.
So, Jared, where do you start? I mean, it's been an incredible test match. Pakistan will be wondering just how they've managed to lose this test match. A lot of people will be pointing to this game, this great game, and saying, this is why the game is so great. I was getting WhatsApp messages about Trent Bridge in 05 and Edgbaston, which was 15 years ago this weekend. But if truth be told, I didn't feel the tension for much of that chase from England, because from the moment Ollie Pope was out, and pretty much that was it as far as I was concerned, Buttler and Wokes looked relatively comfortable right up until about 50 runs to go. And I think they both tightened up. Buttler was out. But even then, it was just too late. Pakistan had already lost the game by that point. So it was a bit of a bizarre day. I think that's what I'm trying to say.
It was like the air went out of the ball after Ollie Pope's wicket. And now some of that has to go to Buttler, because he clearly came in, saw what was going on at that point and was like, we're going to have to get some runs and get some runs quickly. And I think at that point, I don't even think they were really thinking win the game. I think they were thinking at that point, we just have to knock them off their line a little bit. But how many times did the ball play up after Ollie Pope and Ben Stokes? If they'd lost that test by, let's say they lost by a couple of runs, they would have been looking back going, how did we get the only balls that did anything at all? Two crazy deliveries, realistically, when the pitch held up really. I think I said last night, I thought the pitch was fairly flat and that it wasn't doing much. I thought the Pakistani bowlers would have to do. When the Pakistan tail came out and did what they did, I was like, this is a flat pitch. And I thought that if Pakistan kept the pressure on, it wouldn't matter that it was a flat pitch. I think their bowling attack was so good. They didn't keep the pressure on. Buttler played the best innings I've ever seen him play in Test cricket. It's such a weird game, because if you hate Buttler, this is the reason he shouldn't be in the side this game, because of his wicket-keeping. And if you love Buttler, this is the reason that Buttler has to be in the side, whereas somehow he's actually had a par game. I think at one stage, I think he ended up, losing 84 runs when he was wicket-keeping for England and making about 100-odd runs when he batted. So it's a very, very, very bizarre situation from him. But that's the best innings. Before I say that, Chris Wokes shouldn't have been batting at seven, right? He should not have been batting at seven. It was a mistake by England, more so probably when Stokes was fit enough to bowl. And he hasn't made runs in 2 years. And then to play that innings, I thought he batted even better than Butler up until a point where he lost it a little bit in the middle there. I thought that was, an incredible innings for him. So you could easily argue that Butler's wicket-keeping mistakes put them in this position and that Wokes was selected incorrectly. And yet you would still have to say that those are the two best test innings they've played. Butler made that 100 against India when he's only 100, I think, when he was playing for the draw against India. That was a great innings. He played a really good innings against Pakistan. He's played some really good, nothing like this. Nothing like this. An absolute incredible effort from him. And as I said, Wokes was even better. But let's be brutally honest. It did look like they were playing against a shuttlecock at times. I mean, I think Pakistan lost the ability to bowl good line and good length. Butler and Wokes have to get a little bit of credit there. But that ball and that pitch were doing absolutely nothing from that point, from Ollie Pope's wicket onwards for a long time there. And as you said, that's what I think maybe you and I felt, is just that the air had gone out of it. I was shocked that they didn't win it 5 wickets down in the end, that there are any wickets at all. But, it's still very, very fun test all the way through. I mean, think about this. At one stage, Pakistan had England, 3 for -20 after Shah Massoud's knock. Pakistan allowed England back into the game three times. I've got when they collapsed in the third innings. Three times they were massively ahead of this game, Pakistan. England were never ahead of the game until Wokes and Butler had put on 100.
Azhar Ali's captaincy is going to really be scrutinised, partly because his batting has fallen off the cliff as well. You can just feel it on social media. All of Pakistan was slowly, then quickly, absolutely losing the plot. And in fairness, my friend Wacker, he texted me this morning. He says so much about the cricket fans' psyche. He was like, "Nah, England are going to win today." I was like, "No chance." Even at tea, he was like, "Yeah, England's game." I was like, "Mate, they're going to bring back Mohammad Abbas. That's going to tie at one end. And then Yasir Shah is going to bowl at the other end. One wicket and you're through to the tail. No chance." Well, he was absolutely right. And I was wrong, not for the first time. But the pressure's really going to be on Azhar Ali, because for Pakistan to have lost this test, I know the ball went very, very soft. There was no reverse swing. I know that you've got two very inexperienced, raw and exciting bowlers, but they're inexperienced as well. But Pakistan should not be losing this test match.
No, I find it hard to blame Azhar Ali if you take him out of the batting unit, because obviously he plays a fairly major part in that, batting at number three and not being able to hit the ball off the square. And I'm not sure how he's going to make runs with the flaws in his game at the moment in Test cricket. As a captain, he perhaps, when Butler and Wokes came out, he probably tried a few too many things. It felt like, we're going to try this for a couple of balls, then we're going to try this for a couple of balls. Where realistically, I think had they bowled dry, had he maybe brought Abbas on quicker, had he kept Yasir around the wicket bowling into the footmarks, had they tried bowling short to Wokes, a few sort of staple things, I think they could have done it. But realistically, I don't think the bowlers bowled particularly well once they must have realised there wasn't anything going on that pitch and with that ball. That's a group effort. I saw people saying, "Oh, where's his leadership?" And it's like, his bowlers kind of started springing around. Like Yasir Shah, for instance, went from basically landing the ball on a pin to not knowing how to bowl to Jos Butler, to not bowling well enough to Chris Wokes. Shadab Khan, he's basically a wrong-in specialist as a bowler. Chris Wokes can't play wrong-ins. I'm not sure he landed one wrong-in in the right area to him. And it goes all the way through to the end. Again, he had Stuart Broad on strike. He's a wrong-in specialist. He's got the rough outside off stump. Stuart Broad was only sent in to play the sweep shot. And the first ball he bowls is a leg spinner, which helps the sweep shot. Bowl a wrong-in. Make him sweep against the spin out of the rough. So, to say that Azhar Ali was wrong or he was the reason, he certainly played a part, but I don't think it was anywhere near the sort of choke that Australia put on. I think that a lot of things came together. For instance, Yasir Shah bowled around the wicket into the footmarks. Jos Butler tried to sweep, gets a top edge, and goes nowhere. They finally start bowling short to Chris Wokes. Chris Wokes completely muffs one, goes absolutely nowhere, again misses the field. I think it was Shadab, worked out bowling very straight, very flat, very full, making them force across the line. I think they got two leading edges, again just short of the bowler. Considering that the pitch had gone flat, the ball wasn't doing anything, and the bowlers weren't bowling as well as they could, they still actually put on a few half chances. I think there was an edge from Yasir Shah towards the slip. I think, if anything, people are going to say Azhar Ali should have tried more. I actually think he should have tried less. He should have just taken it out. The way they started bowling later on, when they really started bowling for dot balls, that's when they got the pressure back on England. But I'm going to find it very hard to blame Azhar Ali when the batsman threw away that third innings. I'm going to find it very hard to blame Azhar Ali when Yasir and Shaheen, who were bowling brilliantly, suddenly lost the plot when Jos Buttler hit two boundaries. I'm going to find it hard to really blame Azhar Ali for this loss. I think Pakistan had three opportunities to win it. Your captain doesn't lose three opportunities for you.
So where do both sides go from here? Because, you know, 117 for five, you know, Buttler was one single figure score away from potentially getting the drop. They were going to have to look at Wokes coming in at seven if he was to get a single figure score. There's question marks. I mean, I doubt Anderson's going to play anyway in the second test match with the back-to-back nature of things. It'd be more interesting going into that third test if this series is still alive, whether Anderson's brought back. Dominic Bess, of course, you know, out bowled yesterday. Now, of course, victory can disguise multitude of sins. And I was watching the England players celebrate. I don't blame them for celebrating. Terrific win. I mean, Joe Root was probably going through what he was going to say to the press, you know, at about 2:30 this afternoon. But the can potentially being kicked down the street.
Think about it this way. Buttler top edges that sweep and it goes to backward square, right? And he's caught. At that point, Azhar Ali is a good captain. Jos Buttler has failed again. England has lost. Realistically, all those lessons that you have, Azhar Ali can certainly get better as a captain. Pakistan's batting still isn't any good. They would have won the game without that. Wokes still shouldn't have batted at seven, whether he made runs. All those things sort of still exist. And it's one of those things that you suddenly look at the result. You have to look at the bigger picture here. These are two flawed teams, one of which who managed to outflaw the other one, essentially. And we're saying that a lot at the moment. And outside of India, I'm not sure there are many complete teams out there. You know, there's some really exciting teams. I think I said about a year and a half ago on Twitter that England is the most interesting team in world cricket. And oh my God, do they consistently be that way. You know, they are incredible at their ability to consistently baffle you in every single direction. And Pakistan have been like that since, you know, 1959, you know, realistically. So, I think that if England look at that and go, there's no problems here, we're all going well, then they've made a mistake. And the same would have been if Pakistan would have got away with that win, if they would have gone, oh, we've won this game, there's no problems here. There is clearly flaws within both of these teams. And England got away with a couple of mistakes and Pakistan almost got away with a bunch of mistakes. And that could be why this is a really good series, because these teams sort of overlap beautifully when it comes to what they do well and what they do hideously.
Do we get ourselves tied up in knots somewhat, kind of assuming that, you know, every single sports team, in this case England and Pakistan, in our minds are working towards becoming number one in the world, going away to India and Australia to win series for the first time in a few years, when the people who are involved in the actual running of the team and playing for the team, they're just literally trying to cling on here. You know, it is a misfiring side. It's a disjointed side. I could speak for both teams here. They're just trying to win a game of cricket at the end of the day. That really is it.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Yeah, I think it is quite interesting, especially there has been so much this summer already thrown forward to the Ashes. And I'm like, they lost. Let's just start with England there. They lost the first test to West Indies, came back well, but West Indies played a role in England coming back well also. They then should have lost this test in a couple of ways and have come back beautifully. You know, it's an incredible chase. It doesn't matter if everything goes your way, you're still not supposed to win this game. You know, what England did was still better, way better than what you would expect another team to do in that situation. But this whole idea of that, oh, you know, they've got to get the team ready for the Ashes and everything. They've got to get the team ready for every single game they play in. You know, I mean, we still don't know about Bess. Who knows what's going on with Crawley? Rory Burns, again, in this test match, looks like you just like, he's a good player. And then you look at him and go, he's out again. Sibley, I mean, and let's not go to Pakistan, have a captain who cannot play when the ball is outside a stump. And when they cannot play when the ball is at the stumps, they've got a leg spinner that they brought into this side as their fifth bowler, who the captain decided basically not to bowl. And then when he had a chance to bowl, you could see why the captain didn't bowl him. A 12-year-old opening bowler at one end, a 20-year-old phenom at the other end. They dropped Mohammed Abbas recently, remember? Everyone's going nuts about Mohammed Abbas. It's chaotic. When you work in a cricket team, you realize how much of this is absolute chaos and how no one can be on top of it. And as the bloke in the pub or the bloke on the podcast, you go, you know, it's weird why they didn't make this. And then you realize in the change room, is this literally like the coach has got a fire extinguisher on one problem, you know, and there's something. I mean, let's not forget the sort of the psychological madness of Stuart Broad being one of a potential all-rounder at one stage in his career, being an all-rounder as a young player, a potential all-rounder as a test player, to becoming one of the worst tail-enders in world cricket, to the point where now he's found so much talent that they're just like, throw him back up the order and he's going to slap a couple of balls and make it easier for... It just... I think people don't understand is just how crazy it is on a day-to-day basis being involved with this. And this test match and this series against the West Indies, and I think probably the next two test matches, just heighten all that because of the general madness that is involved with everything. And I'm not even talking COVID. I'm taking COVID away, but just looking at these teams that, you know, Ben Stokes' injury and then Ben Stokes' non-injury and Zach Crawley are leaving the side and Shadab Khan batting at seven, all that sort of stuff. It's weird running a cricket team.
Do you think that the way we look at cricket is warped because we grew up with that great West Indies side, which was nigh on perfect? That was then replaced by the great Australian side, which was equally perfect. So from about 1977 through to 2000 and... Well, yeah, but they lost in 2005.
Then so they beat a World 11 and smashed it. Do you know what I mean? I know what you mean.
Well, they lost, do you know what I mean? For the best part of 25 years, is that right?
40 years.
Yeah, nearly 30 years, there's been a dominant, perfect cricket team. And that tells us, as cricket fans, that it's possible to have that. But you, as a cricket historian, in the history of cricket, bearing in mind for the first 50 years, there was only three teams, so that doesn't really count. But that was just an anomaly, wasn't it? Hasn't the majority of cricket been like we have now for the last 10 years or so, where, yeah, there's some very strong teams on home soil specifically, but really, in the main, cricket teams are flawed, even if they are good.
So first time India went to number one in the world, I think it was around 2008, 2009. So Australia had finally lost the ranking, and I don't think maybe South Africa had taken it briefly, but India went to number one in the world. And I wrote a piece just going, oh, you can't really call them number one in the world. They've won a couple of series, but Australia, it's only because Australia hasn't been very good, and South Africa hasn't really, you know, taken that crown yet. And I look back on it as one of the worst pieces I've ever written, because I didn't factor in the fact that, A, what a huge moment it was that India had become number one in the world. We look back on it now and it seems like an inevitability. It did not feel like an inevitability for Indian fans before that 2009 or 2008, whenever it was. And the other one is, I did a piece where when South Africa finally dissolved their great team, and, you know, they went on that incredible run where they didn't win away from home. Didn't lose away from home, but they occasionally lost at home. So it was a bit complicated. And in the middle of that, England had this incredible flare up where they became number one in the world. And you start to look at it. And when you look at the greatest sides of all time, that South African side that wasn't even always number one has to be in the top five sides of Test match cricket history. And you are going modern history a little bit. You almost have to discount some of the early Australia-England stuff just because both of those teams dominated early periods, but they didn't have many teams to play against, and they're only playing against each other. So if Australia was weak, England could be average and still dominate, and the other way around. But when there was a really good period, and I'm trying to remember, I think it's from, let's say, mid-50s through to late 60s, where England and Australia both had incredible cricket teams, right? And they played against each other. But the cricket was so dull, people didn't even really understand it. But that period where West Indies was sort of flaring up as well was very similar to what you have now, where you basically had a multitude of good cricket teams and a multitude of interesting but flawed cricket teams sort of coming through. And yeah, I don't think we know how to do it. As you said, we're talking about 30 years of solid domination by two cricket teams. And since that, India have been number one a couple of times. Pakistan have been number one. So Sri Lanka had this incredible record. You know, England had, you know, this great little thing. Australia were number one, according to the rankings, not that long ago. And people go, oh, Australia shouldn't be number one. But when you actually look at the sort of, I'm trying to look for a word that doesn't have a swear in it. But if you look at the sort of omni-shambles of world cricket at the moment, everyone sort of should have a go at number one. And it's so interesting. West Indies, not that long ago, looked like they would never win another test match again. And suddenly, they've got this really interesting team. It wasn't that long ago when you went, well, South Africa always going to be a strong team. And now you're like, good luck, South Africa, being strong in this current climate. It's so endlessly interesting, test cricket at the moment.
So at what point do we stop trying to make conclusions about all of this?
Never!
About players?
Never!
Because fast forward to one test match and Jos Buttler's going to be out for, you know, for eight again, and he's going to drop a catch. But because of what's happened today, the way cricket works, we're not actually allowed. That's not the narrative now.
Yeah.
That means that for the next two test matches, whatever Jos Buttler does, he could be out for four ducks and drop five catches. Because of what's happened today, that's not to be talked about.
Yeah.
That's the weird thing with cricket.
That's the kind of
in this country anyway. I mean, hopefully not this show, but but the way cricket works, there's one story every day.
Yeah,
you know,
I think
in terms of the way the media works, one story per. And tomorrow the story will be, you know, Azhar Ali's captaincy if you're from a Pakistani slant, and Joss Butler sticking two fingers up at the critics.
Yeah.
When as you say, if that top edge sweep had been caught, this is why, okay, when I was a kid, and I still kind of believe this, when a batsman, I remember hearing Jack Bannister, every time, I love Jack, but it used to really grate with me that every time a batsman scored a century, he would say, and that's one of the finest centuries you'll ever see, blah, blah, blah. And I'd be thinking, well, he was dropped. And when I was a kid, I used to discount a great innings. I mean, a great innings did not occur if a batsman was dropped. You know, all right, if you score 300 and you've been dropped, fair enough. But do you know what I mean? That's the maddening but beautiful thing about this game. The narrative hinges on luck.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few sports in the history of mankind that have luck at the heart. The way, and T20 is probably even worse than Test cricket, weirdly, because of the short nature and the way it goes. But cricket is a general sport. I mean, we know how much the toss can take. I mean, the pitch flattened out and the ball got soft and the game changed today. And that won't be the narrative. That just won't be the narrative. I was thinking the whole time that – I was thinking two things, and both of them sort of around Butler a little bit. But I was thinking – if England lose Joss Butler and Joss Butler doesn't make 50, then he's the reason they've lost. And if Pakistan lose, then Azhar Ali is the reason they lost. And I was thinking, I'm not sure either of those narratives are true. Yeah. And also, I'm not sure that the narratives would have been true. If Pakistan had won, Azhar Ali wouldn't have been any better a captain than he is right now. And the same with Joss Butler. Honestly, nothing about this test match has made me think that the original selection of Joss Butler and all the stuff-ups that it is called. I mean, Johnny Bairstow's career is gone. They made a mockery of their all-rounders, which was a huge problem. The Ben Folkes thing, all of those things still exist today. Joss Butler made mistakes with the gloves and then did well with the bat. That's basically what we expected him to do anyway. And he's, as I said before, he's come out of it par. But that is not the way that people look at these things. And you're right. We veer violently between all these different things. I know this has absolutely nothing to do with Azhar Ali or Joss Butler. But look at the sort of treatment of guys like Sean Marsh and Keaton Jennings, right? All we ever do is look at their failures. And we don't actually look at the very basic things of that they are very flawed batsmen who, if they were only picked when the conditions were in their favour, which we do with bowlers, of course, but we don't do with batsmen as much, they'd actually be incredible single-source players. They could come in for Asian tours and just be really, really good, and then you just sort of discard them and rest them and do whatever you have to do for the rest of the time. But we never think about players. It's literally, how good are they going right now? Most of the stuff that was said about Joss Butler in the last couple of tests was absolute nonsense. The bigger problem with Butler has never been his form fluctuations, because we know consistently he's never going to make runs in Test cricket, because he has consistently never made runs in Test cricket. We already know that. So we know that he's going to have a game like this and then a couple of low games. That is what he's going to do. The bigger problem is did England take too big a gamble with what is a fairly good core of players to bring Butler in the first place? And almost no one talks about that. Almost no one gets... And then suddenly he misses a stumping and drops a catch, and he's a bad wicketkeeper. Two tests ago, everyone was going, oh, at least he's no Dowridge. It's ridiculous the way we talk about cricket. But isn't that wonderful, John? Isn't that a wonderful thing that we veer so violently in every direction? A bit like this test match.
Okay, let's wrap up. Second test, it only gets underway on Thursday. How do both teams come back from this? What do they do? From an English perspective first, I imagine that Anderson will miss out, and I imagine that Archer might miss out as well. I think they might bring in, well, Ollie Robinson's been added to the squad. That was the thing on the way to work today on the Cricket Press WhatsApp group. Given word, Ollie Robinson drafted into the secure bubble. He won't play for his county. And you think, right.
Anderson out.
You know, Anderson out. I mean, he's not going to play anyway, but Anderson out. You know, you can't drop Wokes, especially after he's just hit 84. He's probably man of the match. But Anderson will miss out. It's just a question of whether Archer does as well. If Archer does miss out, bring in Wood. To be honest, though, Jared, I don't think it's going to make a great deal of difference, because Pakistan can't bat.
I was thinking that. The further you went then, I was just like, Okay, so the flip side of what you say is Pakistan. So what are they going to do? Who are they going to bring in? So essentially, the only way they can strengthen their batting order is to drop Shadab Khan and bring in another batsman, I suppose, and move Rizwan down. Or, that's probably my best. Or they drop Azhar Ali and they use one of their spare openers to bat first drop, right? Those are the only things they could do. Even so, I'm not sure that's going to improve their overall batting all that much. And Zach...
No, and also, Shadab Khan, actually, it was his innings in the first place. That actually, he scored 45. He took a few wickets.
Yeah, exactly.
This is going back to the point, isn't it? I mean, this is the thing. It doesn't really matter, Jared. It doesn't matter what England do. And it doesn't matter what Pakistan do.
We need to
stop thinking that there is an answer to this jigsaw.
Perfect example today. I was thinking about the language we use in cricket. I can't remember what it was. I think it was Michael Holding saying when Wokes came in, we've got to remember that England is one batsman short for this match. And he's right. If this test was if that innings was played 100 times, the batting lineup would probably win about 35%, maybe 30%, maybe 25% against that bowling attack, right? But the thing about cricket is that that's not how it's played. We don't play that many tests. And so Shadab Khan and Chris Wokes were both pushed well above their batting places in this test based on form, experience, and overall batting talent. Right? And yet, both of them actually played probably two of their best batting performances that they've ever had. And it's just like, it doesn't matter. Let's just pick a random generator, next test. Pakistan go in with 9 left arm seamers and 2 leg spinners and Jofra bats at 3. It doesn't matter.
Oh, it's brilliant. You know, in football, you have substitutions, and because of COVID, you can have 5 of them, I think, at the moment. And essentially what that's meant is a change in the tactics. So Fulham were playing QPR and they were 2-0 up or 2-1 up with like 10 minutes to go. And for the last 10 minutes of the match, Fulham had 7 defenders and 2 defensive midfielders and an ordinary midfielder on the field. And you just have to wonder if substitutes were allowed in cricket. This is the thing. You just get some absolutely ridiculous permutations. Mate, it's been a great test match in a really balmy way. It's been a great summer in a really balmy way. You don't need fans, you know. It does not affect the cricket in any shape or form. Look, we'll talk to you in the week. You're hosting Cricket Collective on Tuesday on TalkSport 2, 6 till 7 with Harmy. Mm-hmm. I'd love to, it's going to be great to hear what he has to say about all of this. And then we'll be back as well, following on podcast after every day's play, following play in the second test match. It's myself and Jared. You can listen on Acos, Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening throughout this test match. Hopefully you'll join us for test match number 2.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.